Hello and welcome to the Watson Weekend. We're your hosts. I'm Rick Watson.
It's Jessica Laseski. The B team, aka the artists formerly known as our previous selves, are gone. The A team is here and we got a glow up. Look at this.
We have proper branding. I'm excited. Yeah, it's super nice. It's in honor of eBay's 30th birthday, really, Jess.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. That's what we're all here for. It's an homage to where it all started for us, really, because eBay, marketplaces, Channel Advisor, also artist formerly known as, and lots of homages here.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if it's like one of three things we should be doing. Number one, golf claps.
Mm.
Two, pouring one out for eBay or something else.
Oh, I'll take door number three, the something else. That seems more fun. Yeah, you know, they're still kicking it, still hanging in.
Still kicking it.
Yeah.
A lot of free cash flow involved.
Yes, it just is. That's a kind of a machine that puts off cash, so which people like. But where the cash goes, no one knows. So
same thing with the Cowboys,
oh,
for the record.
Oh, you had to go there. Oh, dagger to the heart. I'm just going to say it was a stronger performance than I think people expected. So I'm going to chalk that up in the W column for myself.
Yeah.
Okay?
In case you're curious what we're talking about, Jessica is a long-suffering-ish Dallas Cowboys fan.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. You used to have a defensive end. Now you don't. Because math, Jess, math.
Math is where it's at. We're playing Moneyball here. We're playing the long
Correct.
Game, Rick. We don't care about the W's this year. It's all about next year or 2 years from now. We're
going to
rebuild the 90s team. I have been watching America's team. It just taken me back to my glory days, you know, of the Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin. This is what we're going to rebuild.
Ah, the all cocaine team. I love that one.
Survive in advance, okay?
That's amazing. Anyway, if you're wondering what the heck it is you're listening to, we are your weekly hit of retail tech e-commerce. We know that retail is in a reinvention loop, and we are here to decode the chaos one episode at a time. So thanks for joining us.
That's right. And who brings us this fine program?
Yeah, we're super happy for our sponsor, Miracle, because traditional e-commerce is just code for not growing. It's time to do better than the status quo. Join over 450 retailers that are accelerating with dropship, marketplace, and retail media all in one place at enterprise-grade scale. So, time to accelerate with Miracle. Thanks again for sponsoring the show.
Thank you, Miracle. And we're going to get into our headline hangover next. Let's roll it. All right. We're doing our back and forth kind of play here. If you have not seen this part of the show yet, we're playing a little game. We're going to blur out a part of the headline. One of us has to guess. And we do keep score. I feel like I am winning since we started this. You know, I have a little tick box over here. I'm going to cash these chips in and we'll see what happens at the end of the year.
Yes, I'm excited. First up, American Eagle. Oh, our little friend, Miss Sweeney, who's everywhere these days. And here's the headline for you. America's Eagle celebrity marketing drew outcry and what?
Outcry and American Eagle celebrity marketing drew outcry and it's either backlash or celebration because I think the Travis Kelce one is going well. Oh, I'm going to go celebration.
All of those things are wrong. It drew outcry and new customers.
Wow.
Meaning it freaking worked.
Who'd have thunk?
Who cares? By the way, there's no bad press.
I guess that is a lesson learned, right? That's what they say. I wonder what we should have asked Jen.
This is really good for Mrs. Sweeney's PR person.
Yeah. This is like an I told you so, you know?
Yeah, she's going to keep making bank.
Okay. But we do have to talk about the Travis Kelce collection, correct?
Yes. Why don't you bring us up to speed?
Yeah. I mean, so look, shortly after a well-timed engagement announcement, Travis Kelce's also announcing this collection that he's doing And it seems to be going really well. You know, there's good trends. Definitely his aesthetic. And I think that I think we're getting a taste of what life will be like post NFL retirement. There's going to be acting. There's going to be endorsements. There's going to be, he's not going to go follow his brother's footsteps, I think, in commentating. He's going the Hollywood route.
Yeah, he's going Hollywood. His new line is called True Colors. That's slotted for September 24th.
Mm-hmm.
Just right on to the start of the NFL season. And so it just sort of guarantees every week people are going to talk about it. They're going to talk about Taylor Swift. They're going to talk about Sydney Sweeney. They're going to talk about Travis Kelce.
Yeah, it's a rotation.
Anyway, it's 0-0.
Yeah, okay. So this is also one of your love languages that lives in the supply chain world. Okay, so UPS is here to unveil its 2025 holiday shipping. What?
Rate surcharges.
Gosh, ding, ding. Yes. There are three truths of holiday retail. People are going to procrastinate and they're going to do the panic buying right before. So that hits the brick and mortar retail stores. And that's when they just love, you know, that's when like the candy and the juices start flowing for them. Returns are going to come in. Basically, that's why, you know, retail also has a non-traditional calendar because they want to get like, they want to balance the good comps with the bad comps of January. And then shipping surcharges are guaranteed. So, you know, UPS, FedEx, they love to pretend all their customers are on the naughty list and hike up those fees every year. And I want to show you a little chart here. Libby, help me out. So
I love it.
This is you know, no shortage of like some significant increases. We wanted to look at what was like 23 versus 24 and 25. So if you compare some of these fees, like it's $1.35 to $4.30. from a 23 year over 2 year comp, large packages. But really the over the max limits are where it hurts the most. So those are like your fridges and things like that. Yeah. It's $130 in just 2 years. So that's a 32% jump. It's kind of dicey, right? It's no wonder people increase their fees. So the kicker here is it was announced September 2nd, not giving people a lot of time. Last year it was July 24th. Was this strategic thinking from UPS or?
You know, it's always the same. Rates go up every year. Just wait for the 2025 rate card, which usually comes in December after the carriers play a little game of who's going to announce first. And then everyone just sort of matches whoever goes first. So UPS is doing the thing. They're optimizing for revenue, not for growth. Optimizing for margin, not for kind of parcel volume anymore, because Amazon.
Yes, true story. And I think it'll be interesting to, you know, let the negotiations begin, right? Like this is where typically you have a starting point and then you have an end point, especially if you're a larger retailer. I think the real kicker is this going to offset probably what we are at least hearing might be some lower volume with holiday purchases this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of self-reported nonsense out there, so I'm just going to ignore any kind of holiday season survey for quite a while. Walmart is already saying that back to school was pretty good, and so we know Walmart's going to crush it this holiday pretty much regardless. We know Target's going to be on the struggle bus, so maybe next week we should just like write all the scripts for these.
Oh, yes. That would actually be fun. I think we can do that.
Bullshit reports that we're going to hear about literally for the next 3 months.
Yes. But this is, again, how we live and die by our PowerPoints and what the survey says. So
correct.
All right. Let's go to the next story. What you got for me?
Macy's CEO says he reads every blank note he receives. It's going to be a good one.
It's got to be customer.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm here all day, guys.
Even a broken clock is right. Twice a day. So anyway, Tony Spring, he's actually been, you know, call it, if there's anything faint praise, we're going to give Tony Spring some faint praise here today, and that he's doing a lot better than people expected, meaning like Macy's has been a little bit down and out. Been a lot of activist investors circling the company. Mm-hmm. The company did grow a lot their digital business during the pandemic. They had they managed their inventory better than Target over the past 3 years, which is like, again, extremely faint praise. But the company says it's reimagining its stores. I haven't walked into a Macy's store, and Neil Saunders is usually kind of my go-to on Twitter, the X, for these sorts of things. Usually there's piles of crap everywhere, but apparently that's changing.
Well, that's good to know, because you only have one place to go, which is up. And it feels like the real estate value chatter has really calmed down. So yeah. I don't know if that's still a thing or not a thing, or people have moved on. But, you know, kudos, because really voice of customer is why we're here. And if people aren't shopping, you don't really have much of a story. So
agreed.
Okay.
So
we're tied up. All right. Let's bring this one home. This is also a story you love to talk about and have been following pretty closely.
Yes.
So Klarna to raise what?
$1 billion in IPO?
Oh, you're so close, but oh no, sorry. We were looking for 1.2. I'm not giving any like partial credit here.
When is a super app not a super app?
Yeah, exactly.
When it's Klarna.
Yes, exactly. So here we go. After years of like playing what's the IPO hide and seek, Klarna's finally stepping onto the stage. So they're going with the ticker KLAR, KLAR. Don't know if that was surprising or not. But look, it's 34.3 million shares, priced between 35 and 37, $1.27 billion. It is a bit shy of the 45 point. So it's 14 billion valuation, a little bit shy of the 45.6 billion number we were looking for in 2021. Times have changed. Slight markdown, but still a B, so we're all good. You know, reminder of Klarna's footprint. It's 111 million users, 790,000 merchants, 26 countries, Walmart, IKEA, Apple, all in the mix. And their ad business brought 180 million last year. They've got eyes on a 475 million, or yeah, sorry, 475 billion digital ad market. So here we go. Klarna's on the roll.
Klarna's on
finally
the roll.
Happening.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. The funny thing is, can we talk about this for a second? LinkedIn user. This is always Hendrik, because LinkedIn penalizes him from being in South Africa. So we're gonna get Hendrik to move one day, and then he's gonna show up with his bright, smiling face.
Yes, yes, exactly. So look, I have a couple other things to throw at you about this Klarna situation.
Love
revenues up 17%. So they're going out on a pretty strong high, $3 billion. They've definitely done some what the math guys do, you know, the Vest finance bros call some below the line adjustments. Operating loss of $225 million. But you've still got an operating profit of 151.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You said there was a loss, but there's a profit?
Yeah, dude, below the line, man. CapEx, one-time expenses. Oh, it's all good. It's fine.
Everything good. Community adjusted. It's community adjusted.
Exactly. It's just I move a decimal. The Q2 is looking good, climbing 20% to $823 million. They're good. We're all soaring high. We'll see.
I love it. What is Klarna about? I mean, obviously it's super ubiquitous in the Nordics, slightly less so in Europe. And then they've signed some good partnerships in the United States. They're still primarily known as buy now, pay later. They're not kind of like the first sort of wallet that you get in the penetration in some of their home countries. But it doesn't mean it's not useful. It's just a crowded market, and it's just hard to see how they're going to be able to kind of attain that ubiquity status that they want, and not just, you know, 80%+ of the revenue is buy now, pay later. So that starts to look like just another credit card eventually with regulation.
Mm-hmm.
There are regulations still in the US, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, and they're getting a bit sharper. I think that's the watch out, right? Is there is more scrutiny on buy now, pay later companies. It's starting to show up on credit reports. We talked about that earlier this year. So it's not like smooth sailing from here, but you know, people got to get paid, right? So we got investors, we got founders, we got people hungry to cash those chips in, and they're willing to kind of take now the public scrutiny of you know, the market forces and dynamics, and let's just hope they do a little bit better than Figma.
Got to make that money. Figma. I mean, look, it's going to go up, it's going to go down. All the insiders are going to cash out, so. Like the long term will be the thing. So I'm still holding out for Figma. AI is not going to kill it.
That's right. That's right. I agree. You know, but really what this comes down to is what's Klarna's story and what's their message? And it's a great segue to what we were talking about with our guest today. We had an opportunity to speak earlier with Jen George, who I love so much. I had the pleasure of working with her at Shutterfly. Happy to call her a friend. She's an optimist, storyteller, an ultra runner. She thrives on simplifying the complex, finding clarity in the chaos. And she's, you know, the chief comms officer, senior vice president of comms at Aspen Group. But she's also been at Headspace. She was at Shutterfly. She has CPG background. So she's really navigated lots of different types of industries. But more importantly, I love her perspective, and I learned so much from her. At TAG, she is overseeing social media, social impact, performance creative, and external comms for all of their brands. They're very lucky to have her, and I just can't wait to dive into the conversation. She's approaches really everything she does with curiosity, grit, tenacity, and a belief that everything's possible with the right mindset. If she's running 50 plus miles on a trail or she's helping brands navigate the most complex situations, she loves solving problems and inspiring teams. And that's what she did for me. So I'm proud to say that I learned a lot from her in the years that we worked together and still learn from watching her navigate all the world. And if you haven't followed her on LinkedIn, you should, because she puts out some gems of content. I love when she rewrites what people say. Or should have said. So it's a really great follow. And anything else you want to say on this episode, Rick, before we dive in?
No, this is great. There's a special segment kind of halfway through where we try and guess, sometimes correctly, sometimes incorrectly, what Jen George said versus what Wendy Rhodes from Billions said. She was a tremendous character on that show.
Yes.
And Jen George is her equal, if not better. So we're excited to play the interview and hope everyone enjoys.
Yeah, great.
Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, you guys. We'll kind of start off with, like, there feels like there's constant chaos also in this world. Like, business has gone through a lot of turmoil and change. You know, we had the pandemic, and then you have the supply chain crisis and coming out of that, and then you have economic pressures. Then you have the pressures of there's not the growth trajectories anymore. It's all about profitability and EBITDA. And so let's just kind of start with, like, in this world where we have constant communication, constant information coming at us, you know, communication is kind of a key thing. It's a pillar strategy. You have to have it. Let's, like, kind of unpack what it really means to you. Like, if you said in one sentence, one structure, what does comms ultimately mean in this landscape and in this time?
My perspective is you have not communicated well, two things. One thing is you can have the most beautiful, smart, brilliant strategy. It will fail if people do not understand how to take that strategy and translate it to action.
Yeah.
As a corollary to that, you have not communicated well if you have not been heard. You've just talked at people. And
right. So
I think there is real power and skill in bringing those two things together. And I think the world is not going to become less chaotic. So like in these moments,
what makes you say that, Jen?
Like every time I open my phone or just like open my eyes, you will never have perfect information. People will be yelling at you to wait until you do, but by then the narrative is gone. And so you have to move with what you know. You have to be clear about what you don't, and you have to show up anyway. And you sort of hit on this, Jess, like internally, you can't just feed people a script. You've got to give them enough truth and context so they can walk into a conversation, look somebody in the eye, and not crumble under the first hard question. And that's leadership in chaos. It's not like saving face for the brand, or like it's about steadying the humans inside the brand. They can survive the storm with you. And that's
right.
And so people just don't. They think it's about a press release or a email or a LinkedIn post, like the tactic. And it's just, it's so much bigger than that. It's so much more important.
Yeah. And you've said so many times, and like I said, learning and watching you is like a masterclass constantly in communication and strategy. And yeah, I mean, you know, you always say like, you've never said it enough times. And I feel like when you talk about whether it's strategy, messaging, and why can't companies keep that drumbeat going? Is it the chaos? Is it the like, we are just so used to scrolling and getting to the next thing? Like, why is it difficult for A, them to land the message in the first place, but then B, keep that drumbeat going so it can stick?
My hypothesis, having seen this a few times, many times, is that leaders tend to believe that if they show up with the facts, if they show up with the data, that people will just instantly understand it, and they can do it once, and they've communicated it.
They've checked the box.
They've checked the box. Exactly. They've done their communications exercise. And I think companies get bored of their own message way before the people, you know, or public even hears it. That's the trap.
Yeah.
You can't say something once and assume it's stuck. You have to keep that drum going until actually it's louder than the noise around you. I always tell my leaders that or partners or stakeholders, like, consistency is not boring. It's actually your only shot at being remembered for the right thing. And I think, you know, I have so many examples of this, but the only reason you tend to trust a company or you trust a leader is because you keep you repeat your facts, your commitments. People feel like they can trust what you're saying because there's credibility there. And I think in what I tend to see is people say something once and then they're on to the next thing. And look, mm-hmm. it's easy to do because the world around us changes so quickly.
Right.
And so you feel like you constantly need to pivot. It's like that Friends,
Yes.
And then you feel like you can move on. You should not move on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to come back again and again with context, with updates to keep control of that storyline. Your instinct is often to get one good statement out and hope that the noise dies down or that everyone hears it, but they won't. It's just psychology and human nature.
Yeah. So how many, like, just brass tacks, is it like every all hands? Is it every, like, kind of what's the strategy you recommend to keep it steady and make sure that there's clarity and it sticks?
It has to be surround sound. So I often say, I mean, there's a stat, I think, that someone referenced at some point that it's like, it takes somebody on average 7 times to hear something for it to in their brain. Mm-hmm. But you also can't like whisper your way around something. You have to actually, it could be an all hands. It might also be manager toolkits, right? It might also be FAQs. It could be an editorial on the intranet page. It could be, it has to be a surround sound drumbeat. I think we often think not only is it just a one-time communication vehicle, but it's one vehicle instead of just thinking about the totality of it.
Yeah.
Every channel possible. And so no matter where you hear it from us, from the leader, you're getting the same message, same tone, same facts. So it could be town hall, could be, community meetings. It could be social, perhaps. It could be in interviews. It could be talking points guidance, but the key is it's not just one and done. You have to think about it as showing up around someone.
I also find that the broadcast is almost looked over until someone gets to ask questions about it.
Yeah.
Not in front of other people. So the follow-up from the big meeting needs to be do you have any questions about what we talked about, those sorts of things?
The meeting after the meeting, I think, is actually the most important part of any announcement or change communication or even quite frankly, any comm strategy. It's the meeting after the meeting. What are people saying about the meeting? What questions do people have at the water cooler? What are people saying about the vibe in the room? Like that's what you actually
vibes are off.
Exactly. That's the real talk. That's where the real shit is down.
So
bullshit. That's where the message is either landing or it's not landing.
Yeah, exactly. And you talk a lot about building narratives, having emotion, making inspiring, making it compelling. You've said before, one sharp sentence can align teams better than 50 slides. Can you guide people into your strategy of how do you find signal in the noise? How do you make sure there is that one takeaway that someone can walk away and okay, I got it. Especially when there's a lot, you're going through, let's say you're rolling out your corporate strategy for the first time and you need them to have that one takeaway. What's the strategy or the guidance you give to leaders to make sure that they can land the plane?
I think logic and facts are great. They inform, but emotion is actually what drives action. It's what builds connection. And so I always think about using emotion as part of the signal. Are there relatable feelings that you can tap into? Are you trying to get people to feel confidence in your strategy? Are you trying to get people to feel pride? And so I always think about what is the framework I use, which is maybe very tactical, but it's a no feel do framework. And so we're actually in the midst of doing this right now. We've got a big meeting coming up in October. And we're going through all of our audiences. What do we need after this meeting? What do we need them to think? What do we need them to do? And what do we need them to feel? We need them to, take this information and bring it down into their centers and make sure that their centers are, adapting these principles. We want them to think that there is so much momentum in the business. There's incredible growth coming. And we want them to feel pride. And so I would say once you've thought about that feeling, connect it to why your strategy exists. And that really bridges personal relevance with the broader, bigger mission. And so I think there's a lot of emotional signal that you can weave into your strategy so people just don't miss them.
Yeah. No, this is so great. And then when you talk about those takeaways, I think the other part that gets missed sometimes is there's so much attention on the leader and not their leaders and the leaders underneath that to make sure that's consistent, from a how it gets cascaded down. How do you coach people to have a productive meeting after the meeting and not be that was rough, that was bad, right? Or get caught off guard by a tough question. So how do you kind of go that next layer down throughout the organization and make sure those leaders are prepped to help support and shepherd it through? Because that's usually sometimes where it breaks down too, right?
Totally. Absolutely, it breaks down. You can't, no organization can exist by relying on one single leader. It's just that's not how the world works. It's not scalable. Yeah. It's not realistic. And so middle and functional leaders, I actually think they need more than just talking points. They actually need, and we experience this, Jess, they need to understand why the change is happening or why this thing matters so that they can tell it in their own words.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that, I like to do with teams is when we are planning a change or when we're rolling something out, if we do a little bit of a story seeding session where you're providing small, vivid moments that a middle manager or a functional leader can retell. So for example, a patient's transformation story. One of the stories that we retell a lot at Aspen is it was around why we were changing and expanding access to, we were changing our strategy from broad to being singularly focused on expanding accessibility to dental care to people who didn't traditionally have access. Yeah. And so this one story that we told, and I hear be brought up all the time, is this one patient who he was a successful ad executive and he always wore really colorful shoes. That was his trademark. And when we kind of dug in with him, we realized it was because he didn't want people to look up. They wanted people to look down at his, he wanted people to look down at his shoes because he was not confident with his smile. He was missing some teeth. And this transformation story around him, like it created this moment of, A, understanding of the patient's journey, but B, moment of pride for the business. And it made people less reliant on corporate slides and more fluent in emotional connection. And so I think giving people those moments of storytelling can really help you think about how you amplify and create ripple effects in your story. Mm-hmm. And then like rotating the spotlight is another big one. Like you don't, it, when the audience and your team is seeing multiple leaders, not just the one, tell aligned stories, it signals a shared culture and a unified front when it comes to strategy. I would also say, like, it doesn't have to be this super slick corporate thing. Like, we're gonna and now, just I think audiences, especially now, because there's so much AI slop and like very slick. Like,
I love the word AI slop for the record.
Where can I use that?
Yes, please do. But I actually think probably more than ever now, people connect with the mess. They connect with maybe the scuffle or the like, I wasn't sure how this would go, but moment.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I'm trying to coach folks on now is that humanity and authenticity is going to beat perfection every time, simply because everybody is projecting this perfection thing right now, because it's really easy to do it. Like you can get rich shit, you know, printed out on a platter for you anytime you want, but it's the authenticity that's really hard to fake.
Yeah. I mean, something I really enjoy is, you know, just trying to encapsulate what you're saying. It's like, shut up and let your customers talk.
Yes. We're your people.
Like, why are we here? Help people connect to that. Help people understand what's going on. Because you could say it, but you're not showing it. Yeah. And so do you just have one person's opinion or do you have a strategy? Totally. And a strategy needs to connect to like why you're here.
Totally.
Yeah. What's the point? Why you exist in the first place? And building on that humanity, authenticity thing, why is it that we can't just talk like normal humans when we get into the corporate world? Why? Why does it break down?
Synergize. We have to synergize, Jess.
Yeah. Synergize, align, unite.
I'm thrilled to announce that I am on the Watson Weekend podcast. Somewhere along the way, people decided professional meant stripping out anything that sounds real.
Mm-hmm.
And so we swap plain words for this jargon. We write like we are afraid of being misunderstood. So we cram in caveats and qualifiers. And we so often we focus on saying the right thing instead of the true thing.
Yeah.
And doing that, we make ourselves sound like robots in professional clothes. But what's funny is, and the irony of this is, when you talk like a human, you're actually more effective. People understand you faster. They remember you longer. They trust you more. And I think if people just dropped the bullshit and the corporate armor and said what they mean, messages would land on the first try or the second. But also people, like Rick, to your point, people would feel like they're part of the conversation, not an audience.
Right.
I think that's a relationship nuance that we don't always think about. We think about talking at instead of talking with.
Yes.
And, you know. we become humans, hopefully, again.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that that's what people crave, right? Yes. There's not a connection if you feel like it's so far removed from how you would operate. You just kind of want someone to be real. And we spend so much of our day at work on Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
If it feels like it's constantly filtered, it doesn't have the same, I think, impact and connection. But why can't we land the, who's doing it well from your perspective? Who do you look at and you're like, you know what? I feel like they've got it together. Besides yourself, clearly. I mean.
We'll wait.
Yeah.
It's like crickets, the audio. Right. Like, yeah. It's funny, just as an aside, I joke that I would never read my kids about, at night when they're falling asleep. I would never read them a press release as a bedtime story, right? Like, and that should be your sort of like guide.
Unless you want them to go to sleep quickly.
Actually, yeah. Funny. When I was at Headspace, one of the meditation competitors did this whole sleep meditation reading the GDPR.
That feels right. Yeah.
I think one of the examples that comes to me as an example of an organization, maybe not a leader who's doing it well, is I think Patagonia does really wonderful work. They talk, if you look at the way they talk to their consumers and, they talk like they are talking to a friend on a hike. Like it's clear, it's grounded. Even when you see their ads or product, their product pages, I'm going to get it directionally right, but specifically wrong. But it's like, this jacket isn't for everyone. This is made for serious climbers. Like it reads like an honest conversation, and they can be a little blunt sometimes. Like the way that they show up in maybe activism, it can be plain spoken, but they're not over explaining. Mm-hmm. And then I think when it comes to leaders who are doing it well, this is a really interesting one that has changed so significantly over the last 6 to 8 months. 8 months ago, one person who I do think I've been pretty impressed with is the new CEO of Gap. I don't even know if he's that new anymore, actually. He's probably been there maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
But he's done a pretty terrific job of showing up in a surround sound way. You know, he was at Davos, but he's also showing up, walking the halls, here in San Francisco. So he's sort of in multiple places. Yeah. He's talking very inspiringly and directly about getting back to basics with heritage.
Yeah.
And he's being really clear about where the company has been successful and where there are still improvements to be made. And he's not hedging, right? Like he's not trying to hold back punches, but he's being positive in the way he's talking about the opportunities. And it's also, by the way, playing out in earnings and, where the business has performed over the last 2 years. So I think Richard's doing a really good job.
That's interesting. Yeah. Can we talk about Starbucks for a second? Because that's what everyone wants us to talk about. I mean, like this iconic brand that was on the fast path to becoming McDonald's, undifferentiated service, undifferentiated coffee, is now in the early part of a reboot.
Yeah.
What are they, in theory? I mean, that's the kind explanation. That's
a very optimistic way of looking
right?
at it.
What do they need to do differently now? Do they need to apologize? Like, sorry, we really fucked this up.
I think they're back to Starbucks. Initiative is a really nice message. It's a signal that Brian is turning this page. I don't know that it's a conversation yet, right? So like okay, we're going to recapture the roots of whatever. We're going to write your name on your desk now.
It's a Sharpie. Jess is big on the Jess is big on the Sharpie.
I love the Sharpie.
I actually love it as well. And I like
it. Good, you know, and if you throw it on a heart, that's a heart. Bonus.
Dots.
Have a good day. I love that.
Yeah.
I do think though, there's no, I think the brain, it still feels to me, not human enough. Mm. I think, in my mind, the emotion is implied, but not maybe expressed. Like we get we sort of get the why behind the changes, but maybe not the, there is a gap between telling people you're making space for connection and actually modeling that.
Right.
And I also think change is only coming from Brian right now. I mean, there's no visible space in my mind where frontline partners or baristas or even store managers are in the storytelling seat. We keep hear about changes, but maybe not from the people executing them. Mm. And so
do they need to bring the cast of Friends to help them tell their story?
Central Perk is
Yeah.
Isn't like, that the model?
Magic of the coffee shop or something, because they're getting blown out by on both sides, right? You've got Dunkin' and McDonald's and other places encroaching on the territory with drinks that are supposed to, you know, bring those types of customers in. And then you have your local coffee shop, and then you have what's the place, Rick? Is it it's like George? No, it's there. It's another
Gregory's.
Name. Gregory, there we go. Starts with a G. I got it now. That's, you know, blown up and you see them everywhere. So do you feel like they can turn it around if they can bring that heart cascaded through, or do they need to do something else? They need a new playbook.
I think they're in a full-blown reset right now. I think it's probably the most significant transformation in the space, right? This is not, I think the mobile ordering stuff got really clunky. They had way too many SKUs. And then to your point, all these competitors start sort of nibbling at their positioning. And then you also have, at the same time, you've got employee satisfaction dropping.
Yeah.
And then that connection, that like coffee house route starts feeling like, oh, that's a tagline. That's not real. That's not a reality thing.
Yeah.
So I think the play in my mind is, and I think Brian is talking about this, but it's essentially a return to its core and also this like ruthless focus on ops. And so I, you know, to me that feels like table stakes. Like, okay, you're cutting whatever percent of the menu to speed up service. Great. You're going to redesign stores. How long is that going to take? Like, They have to reclaim cultural relevance. Mm. You know, the coffee category is emotional and it's habitual. Like when you've got your coffee, you've got your coffee, and then you've got your shop, you know, your barista ideally. And so once people defect, it's probably really hard to win them back. And so if Starbucks can deliver on, you know, that third place vibe again, then they can reset expectations across the market. But I think they're going to have to, to me, they seem very focused on the operational fixes. And maybe they have not redefined the emotional reconnection just yet.
Yeah.
And so when I look at like their earnings scripts or, you know, the comms is heavy on the what we're doing, like store closures, menu trims, and light on what is this going to feel like for people? Like,
yeah,
we need to make people want the new Starbucks, not just accept it.
right. Yeah. Like, hey, you're coming here anyway, but we hope we can make it a little bit better for you.
Yes. You mentioned earnings, which is like one of my favorite things to talk about.
Actually, earnings. He loves a good earnings.
I love a good earnings transcript.
Yes,
because you get all the dirt that they didn't, you know, and having been on the side of where you're mapping all the potential questions on a wall for your leaders. It's so interesting to me to see the questions that do ultimately get asked and then how the leaders handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you can almost tell sometimes how they feel about the question by who answers the question.
Totally. And you know, in the background, they're like,
remember, we practiced this. This is you.
Yeah, if the CFO doesn't answer the question, then it's really hairy and it's like very future looking if the CEO has to answer the question versus the CFO who's like, if it's something that they're very sure about, the CFO is going to answer it.
Yes.
Exactly. With dollars and cents.
Yes.
Totally. And that's intentional.
Oh, sorry. One thing you do on LinkedIn is you, I love when you rewrite people's messages and you have like those, like, what are you thinking moments. Let's kind of unpack one, maybe target. Probably had a couple of like, what were you thinking moments, or we can unpack another one. What's like kind of stood out in your mind of like, wow, they really, really flubbed there. And here's what I would have done differently.
I just think they're, for Target, they just don't know who they are. Like, I think part of it is they've been on this half apology tour, but there's one foot in, one foot out, and they went silent. And then, you know, Brian Cornell sent this memo acknowledging that silence has created uncertainty.
Right.
But it's a very vague, like, what is that saying? It was sort of abstract and it failed to own its choices. Mm. And this sort of keeps, I actually love this conversation because it keeps reinforcing what we said at the beginning. It's like these callbacks, right? Like it read to me like a polished press release, then a letter to human beings who were looking for clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you about?
Yes. What? Okay. So you made these choices. Either you decided that choice was wrong, or you're doubling down on the choice. Own your decision. And so you've got this like cycle of like silence, backlash, half apology. And it just feels there's a gap between the words and the actions that feel jarring to both employees and obviously guests, because you're seeing it, you know, play out in their earnings and in their, you know, in their numbers.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of like, it feels slippery and empty, you know, especially when you're ending a DE&I program, which by the way is absolutely a business choice, but then don't say we believe in inclusivity or belonging or whatever that is. Like you can't be both things. And so you have to make a choice and you have to own it. And if you say like, hey, we got this wrong, like, here's how we're going to fix it. Don't just, you know, show the action and lean into the real talk, you know?
Yep.
I think they got stuck between, my hypothesis is that Target got stuck between a brand yearning for belonging and a strategy pulling back from the very voices that built that belonging. Mm-hmm. And so now what you're starting to see is this sort of, it feels hollow without real ownership, heart, leadership, transparency baked into that.
I mean, the crazy thing is Target, at the end of the day, should be about families.
Yes.
I mean, how complicated is it
hard
to be?
Yes.
Families walk into Target because everyone has something they like at Target.
That's right. I'm going to throw back to the
Target. Like, I used to love just like going to Starbucks, walking around Starbucks.
Yes, it was an enjoyable experience. And now it feels like you're walking into a hospital.
That's the best way of putting it. You're right. But like an empty hospital. There's no one in the hospital.
There's no one there. I'm probably not going to get the care I need.
Yeah.
And if I needed to find a Band-Aid, the shelves might be empty.
So. They're probably empty. Yeah, I know. And I think they're now, I think they're projecting like a complete, you know, slip for the rest of 2025. I mean, part of this is like macroeconomic changes, tariff uncertainty, you know, consumers are pulling back on spending. But this is largely self-imposed.
The CEO should have retired 4 years ago.
100%. 100%. And I think you're seeing that. I mean, I'm curious to know who is on the short list for, you know, Brian's replacement. But that's coming in.
It's very telling who they pick to me, where the accent is. Is it on marketing? Is it on ops? Yeah. In retail right now, the trend is ops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. It's make the P&L look better, right? It's inventory management.
Well,
it's,
retail is ops, so I can understand the feeling. It's customer service is consistency, and consistency is ops. But it's lacking the soul, and that's the...
Lacking in the soul.
If the ops doesn't have a clear, visible partner at the table, and if it's only ops, they're going to miss again.
Right.
Yep.
They are talking about, I think they want to do some product innovation or introduction. I mean, I haven't seen anything come through there for a while. I mean, I can't think of the last, I used to love their clothes. It was like, they had such cute designs, and I think they did maybe a Kate Spade collab not that long ago, but I haven't seen, I think there's talk of a focus on, you know, unique products and obviously the op, you know, the ops, you know, fun, better stocking and, you know,
but
I don't know that the emotional piece, like the brand piece is really coming through.
It's all deal worthy now.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. But I am curious. I mean,
am I in the dollar store or am I in Target?
Bring the dog back at least. I mean, he was kind of fun. Fun. Spot needs a friend, you know?
So sad.
You could do the whole family thing. Spot bringing his friends. They're hanging out in Target, having a fun time.
They should put a beret on Spot.
Yeah, it's problem solved. Problem solved.
But they're probably going to have to go with, but actually to your point, Rick, they're going to have to probably go with an external CEO because
I agree.
What would it say to have to promote somebody internally? That's not a whole.
Have they hired a CMO yet? By the way,
I don't think so.
Still,
I don't think so.
It's been like a year almost.
It's been a long time. Or did they? I think they may have combined the role. Was it like? Is it chief commercial officer or something?
Yeah. Oh,
we'll say it is. So Rick, you
Tarjay. I miss Tarjay.
It's Tarjay. So Rick, we've spent a little bit of time with Jen now. So yes. I want to play a game.
Okay.
With you. Okay. Because Jen is the amazing person she is. Some people might call her a Wendy Rhodes of types, right?
First of all, I am honored to be compared to Wendy Rhodes.
Huge fan.
However, no one is giving me like bourbon in the middle of my day. And that's really disappointing.
Maybe we'll fix that. Okay. Yes. What is in that coffee cup? All right. So Rick, we're going to play the game of like, who said it, Jen or Wendy?
Okay.
All right. Action overrides inadequacy.
Ooh. I'm going to say Wendy.
This was a Jen.
Ugh.
This is Jen.
It just feels like something she'd be telling Axe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. It would be, but like this is again, this is why Jen and Wendy are kind of like symbiotic. They're one. Okay. You don't tame a founder, you translate them. You channel their why into a how.
Huh. I'm sure I'm gonna keep messing it up. This is Jen.
Yes. It is, Jen.
All right. It is. Good job, Rick.
The gray area isn't something to avoid. It's where trust is built.
This is Wendy.
Jen?
It is not.
More Jen. So these conversations that we don't talk about, and this is also an earnings call thing too, I think. Mm-hmm. What companies don't talk about on earnings call could like fill volumes.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. I always like really respected Jen for this so much because she would really push conversations. And she was like, look, you have to go ahead and say this. People are thinking it anyway. So just hit it head on. Don't leave it ambiguous. You're going to build so much more credibility and trust. So I just have always respected that so much and taken that with me because it's
what I always love is like the juxtaposition of somebody like Carol Tomei from UPS who just like just love her, just very authentic, just says what she thinks, like we're going in this direction, I don't care, we're gonna lead by, like we're not gonna be the biggest volume provider, deal with it. Yeah. That's the company we are, versus like an Amazon, not Andy Jassy because he can't stop talking, but Jeff Bezos didn't even show up for the damn things. And he commissioned the world's worst slide deck to reinforce the point that he doesn't give a fuck about these calls.
No, he does not care.
But I also think when you choose to not address the elephant in the room or the thing, is that you then don't get to reclaim control of it. So if you don't define that story, someone else will. They probably already have, and they're just filling it, and they're probably going to get it wrong. And so if you can actually keep the conversation tethered to reality instead of letting it spiral into speculation, then you actually have real power. But if you just, you're never going to be able to stop people from talking, but you can make sure they're talking about the right thing in the right way.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
The other thing, I think you've said this, if you're waiting for certainty, you're already too late. We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
What's like the thing that people need to just get okay with and being fearless and just going? Like, what's the point that you just have to say, we have enough, and let's just admit what we don't know versus, okay, you aren't ready to go. We do need to package this up a little bit more. Like, how do you coach people through that?
I would say, particularly in crisis moments, information tends to lag behind perception and optics. Mm-hmm. And so by the time you have every single data point, people are already forming their own conclusions based on rumors or leaks or half truths. Yeah. And the other thing I say quite a lot.
Idiots like us talking about something.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like everything we just said 5 minutes ago. But I think the other thing is first impressions really stick. And the earliest version of a story, even if it's wrong, tends to become the one people remember. Mm-hmm. And so the sweet spot is informed. What's a good way of saying this? Like informed urgency. So you've got enough facts to be credible, but not so many that you're letting this moment slip away. And you can fill in the rest as you go, but transparency is not about having every single answer. It's about saying, hey, here's what we know so far. We're working on getting more information here. This is under investigation. We're exploring this. We don't have all the information yet. But as soon as we do, we'll let you know.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll use an example that Jess and I have followed, which is Peloton.
Oh, yeah.
And the tread with the kids, you know, and it's terrible, right? And addressing it and saying your concern and saying, it would almost be better if they said less initially. We're still studying this, the right thing, versus saying it's not a problem.
Oh, well, saying it's not a problem is it's not the same thing as saying we're looking into it.
Right.
I think those are different things.
It's like, but don't go behind door number two, please. Yeah.
And they still had to reverse themselves and do the right thing eventually. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I also think this is the other tricky challenge, is it's a textbook case, I think, when you hide behind legal first.
Oh, yeah.
They initially leaned into the legal playbook, which is like
legal statement,
knowledge risk. We don't want liability. And then they had to wait for, I forget who it was, to issue like an actual warning. They had to get pushed to that point.
Right.
And by that point, the story's getting written without them, right? So that first narrative was already Peloton's putting profits over safety of kids or whatever it is. And
meanwhile, the video is running like over and over.
Yeah, bad.
And that you can't compete with images and videos. And so I think it's often a struggle between legal risk and brand trust. And yes, maybe they technically protected themselves in court. Debatable, but they also lost all credibility in the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when they finally recalled, it's like, it feels begrudging. Like they were forced to, not
they were back into the corner and this was the last resort versus we probably need to be proactive.
Yes. Yeah. And then you sound cold and defensive, and then there's no empathy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So we've taken up a ton of your time, but we cannot let you leave without acknowledging how amazing you are also on the personal front. Like, Jen is an ultra marathon runner, Rick. Like, runs like 60 miles.
Unbelief.
Yeah. But you've done how many now?
I've done 3 ultras.
Yeah.
And
how is it possible?
I just
Let's start there.
It is so much more possible than you think it is. One of the things that running, particularly ultras, has taught me is that where you think your limits are actually not at all where they are. You can do so much more than you think you can. Mm-hmm. And the first mile I ever ran past a marathon, like 27 miles or whatever, I was like, oh my God, my legs didn't fall off. Like, I can actually do this. And there's something incredibly empowering about that.
Mm.
So, Rick, I think obviously what I'm hearing is you want to go on a run.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of does keep you going? Because that's some pretty strong mental fortitude. Are you listening to things on these?
Yeah. Oh, I love an audiobook.
Okay. Okay.
And a Taylor Swift album. Also, Jeff.
Have you listened to the New Heights podcast? Because I'm on it right now. It is eventually so good. It's so good.
I've heard really good things about it. In fact, I keep seeing like,
all the clips. They do a really good job with their clip, but this in particular, it's like hearing 3 friends or, you know, like people hanging out. It's like very well done. So yeah, I'm fanning out.
I can't wait. I also, Jess, I love to listen to a little Eminem. And
that'll get you pumped up.
I actually have a playlist, like a Spotify playlist that I made for myself. And it's called Break in Case of Emergency. And it's just songs or like speeches or like motivational speeches.
Yeah.
If I'm like really in the pain cave, I just like, I put this playlist on. And one of the songs is your go-to.
Lose Yourself. Yeah. Yeah. It will get you through a lot. It can get you through many things.
I can run hundreds of miles listening to.
Yeah.
Just over and over. Yeah.
Part of my strategy of learning how to rap that song was to run and rap it at the same time. Yes, because it's very intense. Like
it is.
It is. It's very difficult, and like you run out of breath, and so you have the way you train is to do that is you have to
you
run
did a great
and rap
job.
At the same time.
Thanks. She's incredible. Yeah. She did it at like a board meeting once, and it was incredible. Incredible.
No, it was a company meeting.
I wish.
And then I was asked to do like Hamilton after that. I'm like, okay, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Jess is amazing. I think maybe if you have not done it on the pod, you really should.
Yes.
Oh, I did. I lost a bet. I lost a bet with the Super Bowl and
incredible.
I bet on the wrong team. Won't happen again.
Wrong team of being the Cowboys?
Oh, Rick, I knew you were going to say that. Here we go. How are your Saints going to do this year?
Oh, Jerry. We can't get Arch Manning because he's not coming out. So I think we're screwed for another year.
He's hanging. He's
we'll
hanging
have the
out.
First pick, whoever's there. Let's say that.
Rick, did you work it? eBay too, or no? Am I making that up?
I did not work at eBay. I worked at Channel Advisor. So it's like,
okay,
I'm going to Noble.
Sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause I was chatting with, I have Marcel in like 30 minutes, Jeff.
Oh, nice.
And I was talking to Nathan, recently. Cause I think Vinny used to work at?
Yes. Yeah. Vinny used to work at eBay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was asking Nathan, I'm like, did you know Vinny? He's so great.
Vinny's the best.
Yes. Oh, I know.
Yeah. Well, so Rick, any like last, like, you know, we've got, again, the comms master here. So in any like burning tip can you get for yourself?
No, this is great. I mean, I've just loved all the wisdom so far and kind of the tone and everything. And just a reminder to, I like the message to be fast enough, but not too fast, because I think you can't let the narrative be played around you while you're blaming legal for not saying anything. There has to be something you can say to join the conversation.
That's right.
And focus on things. And I think that's especially for someone in a public facing role. It's hard to remember because it's scary as hell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just say something.
it's okay to be human and be vulnerable too. Like it's okay to let that.
In fact, it's really important. You know, because if for example, you are not acknowledging that it's really scary to have children around a product that is, you know, potentially going to be harmful, and you're not acknowledging the concern, and you're just, you know, waiting for lawyers to sort of figure out the details, you're going to lose all credibility, and you're going to lose significant brand trust, which, by the way, is like 30% of your market value. So we can, it's really easy to quantify, you know, things like, you know, line items in your P&L. It's much harder to quantify in real terms, reputation and brand trust and all of that.
Yeah.
But it is significant. It is, you know, often 30%+ of your market value. And so if you're not considering it, if you're not thinking about it, you know, you're leaving a ton of value on the table.
Yep, absolutely. And I think this is also one of your quotes, keep me honest. Discomfort is the currency of your next breakthrough.
Hell, I think so. It sounds like something I would say because I love, love discomfort.
I love it.
So, well, Jen,
it's the place you can't fake it. You can coast through when it's easy. It's really, you don't have to, you know, you can do that in a bad week. You can coast through something, but I'm thinking about my own, you know, in a 50K or 100K, that will expose every shortcut and skipped run. And so that honesty, that like place of honest discomfort is so refreshing when so much of life is about holding it together and making it look easy. And so there's really something grounding and I think powerful in the discomfort.
Well,
yeah, I mean, it's so great.
Jen, you're amazing. You're up early on the West Coast. Thank you so much for being with us. And I can't wait to see you and give you a real hug.
I hope you come somewhere. Like, are you going to come to Chicago soon?
I don't know. I need to figure it out. But yes, like we have to reconnect soon.
I hope so. I miss you.
Thank you. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys. Of course, it's my
pleasure. Thanks.